kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. I got my second vaccine shot today, and I feel like shit, so Cole, talk.
Hi. I nailed it. Chris and Pernella here, and they're going to talk about cocaine.
Cocaine.
Have fun, guys.
America's drug. That comes from Colombia. It's a fantastic...
I can't understand why we're not monetized.
I can't either. Promotion.
What would you guys do if I really was just like, all right, I feel like shit, go?
I would expect it, because I do recall feeling like shit just 2 weeks ago.
And the first game to talk about is Apple Core Quest Adventures, developed and published by that company who made it. This game is
like Apple.
It's
made as a consumed Apple. The Core decides to scavenge the fruit waste to find his family, also eaten in discarded apples, in hopes of building a family while discarded and half-consumed.
If it was a Rattle Lake, it would probably be Apple Quest 2, let's be fair. Like, they skipped the first one.
And it would cost $3.99, and you could get all the achievements in 10 minutes.
I'm going to go with $4.99 and 15 minutes. Apple Quest sounds RPG-ish.
It would have a launch sale,
okay,
though.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple Quest sounds RPG-ish, so true. Obviously it's going to be a side-scrolling platformer.
You're gonna have to at least finish the first boss.
That's right.
Really? You think so?
Sometimes.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes they get real unruly, and you got to finish three of them.
What was it? Right. The latest? I can't remember if it was East Asia Soft or Victory Road, but one of them. Like, you didn't even need to beat the first boss.
To get all of them?
Yeah, to get all the achievements. It was like, kill this many monsters, collect this many coins, open this many chests, and there was nothing for actually beat the first world.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, that's just,
it's glorious.
Like, at this point, they're like, they're formalities now. We only put the achievements in because they're a requirement.
Yeah.
I have played an embargo game recently that I cannot expose the title of, but it gave me an achievement just for launching the game.
Now I want to guess which one it was.
But I can't tell you, even if you're right.
That's Rattalaika for you, Rattalaika, baby.
That's the 13th. Is it Rain it on Your Parade?
Uh-huh.
Is it?
Wait.
Because that's not under embargo anymore.
Oh, well then, fuck that. Yeah, Rain on Your Parade gave me an achievement just for launching it.
Embargo lifted yesterday.
So, get
that. Release is on the 15th, but embargo.
Okay.
Yeah.
At this point, I always wait till like a game has been out for a week, and then I'm like, now I can talk to you about it.
That's what I'm actually looking forward to, honestly. It showed up in a Facebook ad, and I thought it wasn't a real game because, like, this doesn't even sound like it'd be an actual game to play. It just seems
Rain on Your Parade?
Yeah, it just didn't seem like a real game. It looked like some like knockoff like Hero Wars type junk. And I was like, but at the same time, I like the idea of being a cloud who's a piece of shit.
It's like
I want to play that one so bad. I can't wait for that to come out on Game Pass.
It's like Untitled Goose Game lost its mind and was just like, watch this.
Cloud, like everybody's Dickhead like, Edition.
Yeah, because everybody's like, Untitled Goose Game is the goose is an asshole. And I'm like, Rain on Your Parade is just like, hold my thunder and tornado.
Like, you don't know shit. In this game, you fuck up people's lives, literally.
You don't even know. I can't even, well, I guess embargoes are up and I could, but then that would like ruin my review for
next
Thursday.
Episode.
So I can't even be like, you don't even know.
Well, I think we kind of get the gist of what direction you're leaning. But
for $49.99, what do you think of this game? Well, for one, it doesn't cost $49.99, but yeah.
It's Game Pass 99.
Yeah. Fucking Game Pass. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one thing I should mention, only because this is like one of those rare times where I can be like, hey, Jill, I can get behind your Sony hate, which is
ooh,
the fact that...
Do tell.
dear God. There's the fact that, like, so everyone's talking about the whole CMOS battery bit and all that jazz and what's going to happen to games when that battery dies. And the one thing that came to mind for me the most of it out of it was the fact that back when E3 kicked off, way back when the PS4 and the Xbox One got announced, and Xbox went first, and they said, hey, this is how we're going to do games. And everybody was like, boo, screw you. And then Sony was like, on our system, you buy games and you own them, and then you pass them to your friends and you trade them, and they milked it hard. And of course, a lot of people were going, see, Sony had it right. They were looking out for consumers. And you had folks like myself that were like, look, I'm all right with PlayStations, but let's be real here. They both were going to do it. It's just that Xbox went first. Mm-hmm. since they got the hit, it's like, we can switch it all the fuck around. We can't go out like they did. We got to fix this, right? So they denied it all they want. But
yeah, I very much believe Sony was going to do the exact same thing, and they U-turned when they saw the reception.
No doubt. But for anybody who still somehow denied that, I think it's safe to say that the CMOS battery reveal is proof of that. It's literal proof of that. Because you can't claim to have always intended for people to own their games if you still require internet connection to verify ownership of a fucking disc that you purchased and have on your shelf. Like, it is the stupidest thing. And that was like the main thing that came out. I was like, you know, it's at the point where it's like, if nothing comes out to even so much as address that, like, even already, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm just kind of done. Like, if I weren't already looking at backing off on collecting games and purchasing games, that would have been like the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like, now you can't even own shit you put on your fucking shelf. Physicals, we believe in physicals. Yeah, but it doesn't matter because my hardware, both in the disc form and the software in the console, don't work unless you verify that my disc is real. That's the stupidest shit. It's stupid. It's
Let's
really
be
dumb.
Fair, how many Switch games these days are like that, where you don't own the game without the internet because only part of it is on the cartridge?
Yeah, and honestly, I look out for those. I at least appreciate, it's still stupid, mind you, but I at least appreciate that the games will be like, it'll listen to that stupid big white block of like, internet connection required to play this game or whatever. I'm like, well, I'm not buying that. Google was like, well, first of all, and like Spyro Trilogy was like a big example of that because they were like, yo, three Spyro games and you can buy the cart. And it's like, yeah, but you got to download 2 and 3. Like, well, I'm not going to buy the fucking cart. Like, if I got to download 2/3 of the game or 2/3 of the game, I'm not going to buy it. Like, why would I do that? Final Fantasy X remaster, you had to download the second one. Why am I going to buy the cart? You didn't sell me the game. And I think
it's like that on the Vita, too.
Yeah, and I didn't fucking buy that shit. It's like,
you know, what I find to be odd about the CMOS battery thing? It took until the end of the generation for somebody to figure that out.
That is true. And
how did that shit not crop up before?
For all the people that are like, we just hacked this game, or we looked into the software and determined blah, 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 and no one... It feels like maybe people just didn't give a shit. Like, they were just too busy being, like, you know... He's like ass kissers or whatever. Like, I love my game system. I don't want to talk about these things. They'll look out for me, or the mod community will fix it. Because that seems to be a thing that people love to say to just skirt over anything that sucks. The mod community will fix it. Like, even if they do, all the bullshit hurdles you got to go through to utilize the things that a mod community does is like, well,
you shouldn't like need the mod community to fix things.
Yeah. Like when I was in my early 20s, late teens, oh, I could see myself being the same. I was like, oh, it's not that big a deal. I just go to some fucking pirate website and download this hack tool and then run my micro SD card through a series of steps to format and install and format and install. But I have to install in this exact order because if I don't, I break my $300 fucking kiss my ass. I don't want to deal with that. I'm old. Just give me a thing that works. I worked hard for my money. I give you my money. Make it work. And don't dick me over with it. That's not complicated. And the fact of the matter is, they're already getting money hand over fist from people who just keep buying new shit because we can't settle on our old crap. In fact, I take that back. We can not only can we not settle on not only can we settle on our old shit, but we also buy the new shit. We collect retro stuff and then buy new stuff. They are making
Ooh, tons. Me? What? Huh?
Yeah. And it's like
Chris, what? Like, collects retro and buys new? What?
No.
Drop it.
Oh, and then the companies are still like, how do we make more money? How do we fuck people over more? And I'm sure someone
you know how say, we fuck people over by having them drop bits and waste them on our channel, Trivium Chimp. Thank you for the 100 biddies. Thank you for wasting your money on me. I appreciate it. Shout out to you for dropping by and hanging out. Much love to you.
Now that's a segue. It's like, speaking of fucking over the industry, here's some biddies. Like what? Speaking of cerebral palsy, we got 500 biddies.
Jesus, what?
Like, I don't even know anymore. It's like,
yeah, I got to make it work where I can.
Speaking of rectal cancer, we got 300 biddies on the docket.
Speaking of rectums, our first game to talk about
tonight. Sweet merciful crap. Oh man. But yeah, honestly, I figured that would interest you because like it's been on my mind a fair bit, and I was like I said, like I'd already was thinking about or not even thinking about. I've already started on like the idea of like buying less like physical product and less games. Period. Actually, just being like I'm done, and yet right after I say that, like a month or two after I make that statement and adhere to it, this shit comes out, and it's like, well, makes me wish I did that a generation ago for PS3. Right before the PlayStation 4, I wish I did that shit. Because, woof, I've got a lot of titles over there that are going to become dead weight. Don't know how long it's going to take, mind you, but woof, I don't even know. Maybe replace that battery or ASAP. So it's like, well, at least it's sitting there for a little while I still internet connection running and get a fresh one in there. But I don't know. Maybe I digress. I mean, what do you guys think of that? Like, do you feel as though it's a big deal or is it just like, oh, you're overthinking it? The idea of not owning your shit's not a problem. You just play it while you got it and then burn it while you're done.
Or have Nintendo take it away from you.
True. I honestly think that emulators are going to figure it out and find a way to get around the issues and keep PS3 games working.
I think we should just leave it to the mod community.
Yeah.
Christ.
They'll figure it out. They will. They always do.
It's infinite free labor.
I'm still waiting for them to get the damn Saturn running proper. I think that's like just
true.
With this dual cores and mess. Dude, Christ. But yeah, I don't know. It irks me. I just can't help but say that it irks me. I don't know what it is about that. I do know what it is about that. Fucking not owning my shit. That's what irks me about it. Oh, right. There it is.
So anyway, we got games to review. Is everyone ready to get into these?
I'm just wondering how much is going to ultimately get edited out of this episode.
A lot's going to get cut.
I'm your host, Joe.
I'm actually going to cut a lot of stuff. So first game to talk about tonight is called Poison Control, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released April 13th on PS4 and Switch for $39.99 digital, $49.99 for the physical Switch edition. Spirits are being trapped in poisonous manifestations of their despair, and only Poisonette and her soulmate can purify them. Venture through the different bells hells to defeat enemies, learn the stories of the fallen souls and other Poisonettes, and fight your way to heaven in the stylishly twisted action shooter. Pernell, tell us about Poison Control.
All right, so Poison Control involves you creating it's not a very complicated system of creating, but nonetheless, you create a character that you will take on as the main character. And then immediately into the game, you meet Poisonette, who is your quote unquote soulmate in the game. That's how you define it. By that, meaning that the two of you, for whatever reason, are sharing a body in hell. The main way you control your character is by running around as him. But when you hold the trigger or the left bumper button, you control Poisonette for a short period of time. What that means, I'll talk about shortly. So the whole purpose of these two getting together and connecting as a pair is because Poisonette, and by proxy dragging the main character, wants to get to heaven from hell. And in this world, the way you get to heaven is by collecting 5 stickers and then paying like the equivalent of the River Styx toll to go to heaven. So stickers are obtained by purifying Bell's Hells. What the hell is a Bell's Hell? Well, that's a stage in this game. And it's composed of the soul of a girl who has fallen to hell for whatever reason in the human world, and her world, her Bell's Hell, becomes like a poisonous bog where monsters called Klesha run around, and ultimately the way to purify it is by traversing the Bell's Hell, finding the reason why they descended downward, and I guess helping them come to terms with why they died, essentially. So the way that, how does that work though? So okay, you choose a stage, you go in, and it's basically like a sort of like a roguelike dungeon style in that it's just like a bunch of rectangles connected by corridors with a nice, you know, like scenic background that runs around, or like an occasional object that like personifies that dungeon. And as you run through the different areas, you will come across Klesha that you can shoot in like a shooter style game. You can lock onto them. You can use the trigger button to fire on them while holding down the left trigger to enter shoot mode. You have guns, and they are based off of Poisonette as your first gun, as in you literally are firing bullets named after her. I don't know why she's your first gun, but whatever. Then later on, as you play through stages, there are three icons you can collect. And if you can collect all three icons before the end of the stage, you get a new weapon or item, which I'll talk about second also, I guess. But in addition to that, there's also some monsters that when you kill them, they give you new guns. And sometimes a chest or a purification can generate a gun. Also, in addition to just shooting things, the other gameplay mechanic in the main stages is the actual bog purification. When you hold down the left bumper, like I mentioned earlier, Poisonette is produced on the screen, and she can run around until a timer runs out. During this time, she is kind of like that game like Quicks, where you form boxes, but you essentially are running around, and if you form a circle around a spot, everything inside of it gets purified. So the end goal is run over poison as Poisonette, which she is immune to, make a circle around it, and then boom, let go of the button, and it all gets purified away. Why the hell are you doing this? Well, one, the main character can't run over poison. He takes damage. Only Poisonette can. So by purifying it, you clear it out. Two, some of the levels have a mission objective that pops up every once in a while where you need to purify Meyer specifically. So that's your goal. Three, sometimes purifying it gets you items, including money or treasure chests, which could include, you know, healing items or those chips I mentioned earlier that unlocks more gear. And lastly, because it's kind of enjoyable, if an enemy's caught in it, when it blows up, you know, they take damage from it. So it's a good thing there. And there's one more reason. As you purify poison, the poison generally fills up a meter. It's represented by butterflies. And for each butterfly you fill up, that's one life you get. So if you run out of HP and die, you revive if you have a full butterfly. So you have pretty much have to fill up, you know, purify Meyer to get more butterflies to stay alive. Okay, so basically I just described the majority of the game pretty much. Like you fire at enemies with guns, you purify bogs with running around them in circles, and also you eventually fill up a radio gauge that lets you use something called a soul shock. It's an AOE effect that circles your character and just blows everybody back. So you go through the stage, you fulfill the objectives, talk to like various hell souls that are kind of just floating around that either A, just kind of give you quick tips in the game, or will be related to the actual Bell, and they kind of provide exposition on why she's there and how to, and they, just her situation as you try to figure out how to get her out. And then you beat stages. If you beat a stage, you get a sticker. And then hopefully after getting 5 stickers, you will escape. But, of course, if it only took 5 stickers and you escape, this would be a short fucking game. So just know that there will be reasons why ultimately you don't just get out after 5 stickers and the game continues. Between stages, you will get, like I said, you mentioned earlier, you get money as you do levels. And between the levels, you can spend that money to upgrade all the stuff you get. There are normal guns, which you get, and you can kind of cycle between those two, and they can be upgraded with money. There are another type of gun you get, usually from monsters, that isn't upgradable. It's just a static weapon. And since they occupy two different slots, that's meant to say, hey, you have 2 guns you can upgrade and equip, and then 1 slot that can be equipped with a monster-based weapon that can't be equipped, so it's like a way of balancing what you can use. There's also items you can equip that determine, like, you know, different like perks and stats for your character, like as far as like, you know, HP regen or poison resistance and stuff like that. And so you'll basically be making your character lit up between levels by doing that, by equipping those things and upgrading them. Last thing that comes in the upgrades in this game is this was made by the guys who did the Princess Guide. And with that in mind, it's the same graphic style, And also kind of the same upgrade system as that game had, which is that every once in a while you'll get a token, which will generate result in a conversation between the main character and Poisonette. She'll say a few lines, and you'll get the opportunity to make a response to that line set. Of the three choices you get, they're all each associated with a different, you know, trait, like empathy or, you know, masculinity or various just general social traits. And each time you choose one, that bar goes up. Every time you reach a certain point, it levels up. And for each level up, you'll get a new perk, like HP and defense increases, or again, poison resistance, or more ammo on something, you know, just general ammo buff. So you could either play by answering the questions in a way that gets you, you know, the responses you want to give her, or you can specifically play with the intent of maxing out the stats you want. Now, as I say, you can just go back to the level and get the same thing to happen again and have the same conversation and see all the responses, which you might do if you're grinding for money, but would you do that? I don't fucking know. As far as the game goes, as far as my personal take on it, it has a few issues. One, the gunplay is kind of slow because every gun has ammo, and aside from the guns that have rapid fire, they don't particularly fire quickly. And when you run out of ammo on a gun, the refill can be pretty slow, mostly, again, depending on which gun you've got in this reload stat. But there are definitely more than a few times I've been playing the game where, like, I had all my guns that run out of ammo, and I'm just kind of running around like, man, please, one of these needs to refill so I can get back to shooting jerks.
Do they refill over time, or do you have to find ammo?
Both things occur. Like, if it runs out of ammo, it will slowly regenerate on its own. But if you can find the ammo, gotcha, you'll get ammo regens too. But it's not like it's like a Doom game where, like, ammo is very plentiful. Sometimes there will be moments where you just don't have it. You'll just run out because you're shooting jerks. So there's that issue. And I'm guessing that that's their intent to also say, hey, that means you'll want to carry guns around that have more ammo. But even with that in mind, you'll play for a little bit to upgrade a gun to have that kind of ammo. So the first level or two, trust me, you're going to be like, fuck, I'm out of bullets. So just prepare for that. The next thing is that the environments themselves and the gameplay, it's not, I guess that's the intent maybe too, but it's not very varied. Like, it became a very specific routine of, like, go to square, enemies might spawn. Oh, in this case, they want me to kill one Klesha. Five spawn, but they want me to kill the one, so I'll kill that Klesha. He's dead. Okay, purify any oil that's nearby. Walk down the corridor to the next square. Enemies spawn. This mission is purify 70% of the bog. Okay, I'll just circle and clear the bog. Okay, move forward. So it's a very, very constrained gameplay loop that doesn't offer a ton of variety in this. So if you're not interested in actually just doing those two things and learning about the bells, you could get bored of this very fast. But I personally found myself being okay with doing it in spurts. Like, maybe do a few levels here, shut it down, come back to a few more levels, shut it down. But I don't see this as a game I'd want to marathon, because I'd get tired of it over time. I wish it had a little bit more variety. But the boss fights can be pretty fun when they come, when you get to those. Like, because they usually involve enemies that can generate, like, ooze, for example. And at which point, like, oh, crap, now I got to dodge new ooze production, explosions and crap like that. But normal enemies just coming, that is cool. So, also, but one nice perk I can give to the game is that the music is legit. Like, I do like the music a lot. The art direction is pretty cool for the stuff that does show up. I could do without the mid-level Hegon radio segments where it's like two girls who are like talking back and forth, like, hi, we're on the radio. You're in fucking hell. There's no freaking radio. Like, we're on the radio. We're cute. And this person's dead. And here's a clue to purify her. But what's the need of a clue? We're doing the same fucking thing. Talk to souls and open chests. Nothing special there, but it's kind of in that regard. But
I wonder what music they would play in hell.
I don't know. Highway to Hell, but you're already there, so maybe not that.
I don't know. Anyway, $40 on Poison Control. What do you think?
I think it's a try it at least, because it's not a bad game. It's just not a game that's going to knock your socks off or anything. But thankfully, it's not fucking Princess Guy, and I'll give it that.
Not a fan of that one?
I wanted to like the Princess Guy very much, but that one had issues for me that ultimately, well, in my old review, I think I pretty much labeled it as like a low-end try. Like, basically, it had potential, but they didn't quite click.
Gotcha. All right, well, next game to talk about is called Shelter 3, developed and published by Might and Delight. What a great name. Released March 30th on Steam for $14.99. What happens when a leader falters? The matriarch needs your help to get an important destination, and you must keep everyone safe along the way. Decide which paths to take as you lead the herd through the matriarch's forgotten places, but choose carefully, for each path has its own shadows. Ole, tell us about Shelter 3.
The path's shadows are often tigers, and you will have no indication they're about to kill your whole group.
Do you get eaten a lot?
I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you kind of have to.
I have
to. That's your job right now, to talk about getting eaten by tigers.
That is the point of this video. So, Shelter 3, to be clear, this is my first Shelter game. I'm aware of the others, but I have never played them. But Shelter 3 is a survival game where you play as a matriarch of an elephant herd. The aesthetics for this game are very lovely, but also a little difficult to adjust to, because everything kind of looks like pieces of quilted fabrics, like stitched together, right?
It's overused on this show, but it's a very unique visual style.
It is. It's lovely, but it can be a little jarring if you're not sure what you're looking at. Thankfully, the elephant has an option where you can kind of like get a pared down view where everything goes black, and then you can just see important bits kind of glowing in a relevant color. That's an incredibly helpful feature that I found entirely by accident, and I found this entirely by accident is the extent of my entire experience with this game. There is absolutely no guidance whatsoever on how to do anything. The first oof is that the controllers don't work. You have to use keyboard and mouse, which was my first strike against it. I was so disappointed that my controller didn't work. So I struggled through using the keyboard and mouse, and the keyboard controls are incredibly tight and forced. Obviously, W, A, S, and D are movement, but E and F and R are interactive. And to run, you need to press down on W. And then, of course, you're using A and D to like look left, or to move left and right, while you're using the mouse to look left and right. And you have to hold down shift at the same time.
Yeah.
It is a horribly uncomfortable way to hold your hand to play this game. Thankfully,
and that's why I don't play mouse and keyboard games.
Yeah, like I was like, look, I have rheumatoid arthritis, y'all. My hand does some funky shit just on its own accord, and I thought it was gonna get stuck like that trying to play Shelter 3. I was like, I will never unseize my joints from this position. This is just the way my hand is from now on. I've seen that pose in pictures of what happens when you have rheumatoid disease. I was scared. So I would give anything to see controller support be brought along to Shelter. It would have made it a lot more enjoyable. Pointing out which fucking button does what would also be a lot more enjoyable. I understand that they want a more minimalist HUD. Like, I get it. And most of your prompts kind of come in the form of like a small bubble that will pop up around the corresponding elephant. But they also don't fucking tell you what any of the symbols or anything means. The only thing I could figure out was how to feed the nursing calf milk when I didn't have milk to give it, and whether or not it was happy I gave it milk or not. All the other logos, never figured them out. There's a fucking waypoint system. I didn't know that they were waypoints until I was looking up what other people had said about the game. And I was like, holy fuck, those mysterious symbols in the sky were supposed to be waypoints. And I didn't know. I just kind of stumbled onto them. And they're incredibly untrustworthy if they're supposed to be waypoints, because I just kind of stumbled onto them. And there were a lot of times where I had no idea where I was going, or what I was doing. You have to worry about the AI. You have a whole herd of elephants with you. And by a whole herd, I mean like five. The AI controls all of them, and you are solely responsible for the matriarch. But wherever the matriarch goes, the rest of the herd will go along with them, with her. Which would be great if they didn't just, like, magically get stuck on some really random shit. There could be the tiniest little rock that may not even be a rock. It may just be a part of the pattern on the fabric-looking art. I don't know if it was a rock, but they stopped on it and would not go. And I had to go all the way back and around and get them to follow me, and then take them around another way to get them to pass it. And at that point, a tiger jumped out and killed us all. And apparently you can fight the tigers, but I never figured out how, because there's no visual indicator that a tiger is about to fuck up your catch. You can hear them. That doesn't mean shit. Because there's no, like, the audio cue isn't related to where they are, and it just doesn't make a difference. It's like, okay, I heard a tiger. Oh, never mind, everybody's dead. I wish the game... Yeah, I'm gonna say it. I wish it was easier. Because I think the story is really good, but there are certainly some quality of life improvements that could be made to make the actual core gameplay mechanics of it better. I know that the devs are aware that their reviews have been really mixed for Shelter 3, which is a plus, and they do intend to take, comments and work on it. And if they listen to anything I say, its visual indicators hold my hand just a little. Just tell me what shit means. Give me a legend that I can, like, pause and see what the legend is. And controller support. Because I really wanted to love Shelter 3. I love the odd, artsy, experimental type of games.
Yeah, I knew this one would be, like, right up your alley, but it sounds like it's kind of a mixed bag.
Like, the moment I saw it, I was like, that's my shit. And so I think this one
even got a yes, please answer from you when I asked if you were interested in it.
Yeah, it did. And because I was genuinely looking, I think I even told you about it in advance and was like, I would like to have that. Maybe. And I don't do that often.
You don't do that ever.
Yeah.
You are the least picky, like I offer you something, you're like, fuck it, sure. And you never come to me like, hey, could we get this? Could we get this? You're just like, whatever, give it to me.
Because I'll play anything. But I think that's kind of what made Shelter 3 feel a little more disappointing for me, was because it ticked all the boxes and it should have been the right game. And yet it just didn't work. It needed just some of the most mundane quality of life type of changes to make it a little more playable and enjoyable. Otherwise, I think the concept and the art, as odd as it is, was really just really cool. But it just needs a little more smoothing out to make that gameplay loop more enjoyable.
Well, as it stands, $14.99, what do you say?
As it currently is, it's really hard for me to give it even a try it. Maybe wait for a sale. Is that an option?
Yeah, well, or we'll go with that.
Patches it, you know. Wait for
keep your eyes on it.
Yeah, because they at least know that they need to work on it. So, you know, keep an eye on it. Wait and see what the devs do. I would be more than happy to check it out again if they change their mind. Because I don't feel like it's a full on deny it. Because there are plenty of people who would play it regardless of my arguments against it and be like, this was great, and that's fine. But there really needs to be some accessibility options at the very least.
Okay, if there was controller support, what would your decision be?
At least to try it. It would a controller alone would shoot it up to a try it. Because at least it wouldn't, like, freeze my joints into a wretched claw of doom.
There you go, Might and Delight controller support. And otherwise, it looks good. I like the visuals so much. It's such a cool visual style.
I know I saw some people complaining too, like, oh, it's a shorter game, because you can effectively, like, if you're good enough at surviving, you could probably get through a run in 30 to 45 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And to, like, go through all the paths would probably take you a couple of hours. But, you know, that's if you figure it out and know what you're doing first.
Yeah.
And even with that, like, oh, it's shorter, I wouldn't hold that against the price if that gameplay loop was solid enough.
No. Oh, well, next game to talk about is called Breath Edge, developed by Red Ruin Softworks, published by Hype Train Digital, released April 6th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $24.99. Survive in outer space together with your immortal chicken, discover the truth behind your sudden spaceship crash, craft tools, pilot vehicles, and even control space stations to survive and explore the wreckage. Brunel, tell us about your time with Breath Edge.
All right, well, Breath Edge is a game that it depends on what you're looking for. That will probably determine what your feeling is on this game, because originally, oddly enough, well, I'll talk about the game first, and I'll tell you how I felt about it. So the idea behind this game is that you are pretty much on a space station, or a ship, rather, and as the ship is careening through space on a trip, something happens, resulting in the ship crashing. And now you are marooned out in space, pretty much prepared to die. And for some reason, you have a chicken. and you are now tasked with the idea of getting yourself to safety, or at least figuring out. Well, it's less about figuring out what's going on and more about just freaking living, though you will eventually figure out what's going on as well. Since this game is kind of taking place in the form of a flashback, it starts out with you being interrogated, likely by the guys who run the company you are working for or on the ship of, I don't know. And it's like, well, time to learn the story of it. So that's why I was playing. So what ends up happening is you're on the ship. The ship has oxygen. It has a few food items you can have access to, like food. And, well, actually, doesn't even have those yet. It just basically has a crafting table and oxygen. Your goal is to go out into space and scavenge for things. Like, pretty much, like, you're literally floating out there. You might, say, fly by some balls of ice. You grab the balls of ice. Or you might find, I don't know why it's out in space, but nutritious goo is a thing you can find in space. And you will collect it. Aluminum, ice, anything you can come across, you collect it and you hoard it. Take it back to your ship. Every once in a while, you'll come across, like, blueprints or get ideas for things you can craft based on what you find in space. And then you use the tools you find to craft at the table to produce new things. And those things are generally tools that will allow you to progress further and do better. So, for example, at the beginning of the game, you have nothing. But eventually, when you're out in space, you'll see, like, big balls floating around, like maybe asteroids or, like, scrap debris. And you can't break it because you've got nothing with which to break it. But once you find the right components and stuff that you can pick up, your character will get the idea to build a handy scrapper. Go to your table, put the things together, you have a scrapper, now you can float out there and break debris up and get more components from the debris. Take it back to the table, build more scrappers or other better things. Of course, you are on a limited timer because you have three things to be concerned about. Hunger meter, water meter, and oxygen. Hunger and water decrease over time. I've never let them run out, so I don't know what happens if you run out. I assume you die. And then also there's oxygen. Surprisingly, I've never let that run out either, but that's also because I'm insanely cautious. But I also know that, once your oxygen runs out, your health will start to deplete. And if that runs out, I think it's safe to assume you die. So as you go out into space, oxygen runs out. If you don't get back to the space station in time, you're screwed. So the options are get back in time or find oxygen candles, which you can use to boost your oxygen a little bit more. So you're floating around, you're getting components, you're building new things, and you have a spacesuit that's kind of occasionally dumping messages and suggestions to you for, like, your next goal. And for some reason, you have a character named Babe, who is literally a user icon with a pair of breasts and a bikini that's talking to you, and it's pretty much just trying to kill you. Because everything it tells you is just like, she sounds like a Russian spy. She's like, sweet lady, I found a new thing. You go out and take your helmet off and you breathe air, you die. And it's like, what? So it's kind of odd because if there's a player who actually reads any of the stuff she says and takes any of the goals seriously that she provides you, you're an idiot because it's pretty obvious she's trying to kill you. But I think that's kind of humorous in his own right. Like, well, will I fall for Bay's bullshit this time? Nah. But it's funny to kind of hear what she has to say. But ultimately, once you get past the humor of a chicken that you use to short out electrical wires sometimes when the mission calls for it or whatever, the ultimate end-up goal ends up being getting as far as you can based on the missions and pushing your limits to get to the next environment or whatever. So, for example, the first major hurdle you come across is radiation. So you might find yourself in a situation where, like, okay, this area has high radiation content, and if you get too irradiated, I assume you die. I never got too irradiated because I got lucky as shit once. But as a result...
You're terrible at testing what happens in games when things happen.
I don't like dying in games, even for reviews. Let a worse player die. Not me, damn it.
I know Cole would die just to break the game.
Yeah. I just look for opportunities to fuck shit up.
Die for the cause. But like, so you'll end up like, it'll be like you getting health, you know, water and food and oxygen and scrap. And then eventually I need to get a suit that can deal with radiation. So now you got blueprints for a suit, an upgrade, a suit upgrade. See, I get the components for that suit upgrade, lead paint and lead everything and this weird shit, which also runs the risk of irradiating you. So that's fun to get. And of course, getting back and forth to the station. And then as you get to a certain point in the game, you end up at a point where you're at a new, like, space station hub because for story reasons, you're now marooned in a different area of space and you have to proceed even further out. So that becomes your new mission. Get further out and do more. So, of course, that ultimately also means that the things you can craft expand too. So now you're making salty and honey packages, which allow you to get more food back, but they make you thirsty when you eat them. So now you're balancing food and water in a way that one drains the other. So that gets a little interesting. There's also just general upgrades that allow you to like boost through space and like contain more oxygen so you can get further out. But it's kind of funny, though. I guess that's how these games are meant to be, in that you get these upgrades and you're like, all right, now I can do more. But the game says, well, now that you can do more, we're just going to make it harder. So now you have to go farther out. So yeah, you get more oxygen, but you have to go a farther distance without getting back to space, to your space station. So sucks to be you, chump. You can build like oxygen store, you know, like hub stations. So it's like you can just put it out in the middle of space and it's a floating balloon that you can use to refill your breathing tank to a certain point. And if that runs out, you can refill that with an oxygenizer. But for all that, there comes one dangerous element to it, and that's a storage limit. For someone like me who hoards their shit, you get 120 items you can hold at a time. Sounds like a lot. It's not, because you will max that out so fast as a scavenger scrapper. So eventually you're going to find yourself like trying to collect one more ball of ice, because you can never have too much water, except you can because you're out of space. So now you got to figure out how to hoard stuff or what to use and what not to use. I mean, there are like storage compartments in some of the stations or like suitcases you can build. But here's the rub of that, too. Like I mentioned earlier, you go from station to station, and quite frankly, with the distance between the two points, I'm generally not wanting to go back. Though I'm sure that eventually I might want to if I get like, you know, like something, once I get one of those, you know, vehicles, unless you go further or faster or whatever. But is it really worth it going back for like three upgrade items ago to get stuff that you left in a suitcase on a ship? Probably not. But with that in mind, the thing that's weird about this game, though, is that I tried to start playing it like 2-3 different times. And each time I was like, this is boring. Like, I'm not enjoying this. What is the fun? Like, I fell asleep on it the first time I played it, to be blunt. But here's where it gets weird. You might be thinking, well, clearly Pernell fucking hates this game. Well, I started it at first, but what happened was on the last attempt I made to try it, I was doing laundry and I had to wait till the laundry was done and dried. I started doing it late Saturday night because I'm an idiot. But I was like, okay, I got to stay awake but I also want to put this time to use, so I got to play this game. I got to review it soon. And I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the fact that I finally got to the point where I could build a freaking scrapper and start smashing stuff, so the gameplay loop officially started. But next thing I know, I was playing until 5 in the morning because I was really into the idea of pressing out a little further, getting just a little further up in the space, getting a little bit more supplies. What's over there? I want to see what's over there. Oh, cool. Weird, goofy elements like space, like astronauts that died playing a knockoff of Mortal Kombat. That's pretty awesome. This like knockoff Nintendo controller I can just put in my collectibles items box. Because that stuff's out there too, like weird collectible items, like, you know, like Gremlin figurines and like 80s stuff and whatever. So I was officially kind of hooked. I liked the idea of trying to press myself out further to see what the next thing was over the horizon. And I think that's how the game hits you, gets you. It's the idea of pressing forward, doing more, getting more stuff to build new things. And even if you never truly feel as though the stuff you built made you more powerful, because like I said, the gameplay loop ultimately makes it more difficult, meaning that your upgrades are now the baseline. You're not overcharged, you're properly charged now. But despite that, I genuinely found myself enjoying getting new stuff, which I knew meant I could build new stuff with it, ultimately knowing that I needed to use those things to get to different points in space. And maybe one of these times I might just go see what the hell Bait was talking about, this 5,000 kilometers out in the space, which is something this is, you're really not meant to go, but it's out there as a marker that tells you you can go there if you want to try. You're probably going to die, though, which is why I never did it, because I just felt like I'm sure that's going to kill me, because there's no way I can get 5,000 meters into space without a vehicle yet. So all in all, though, I think the game is fun. There's humor in it, too. The humor can be hit or miss depending on who's playing it. So I'm not going to use that as the selling point in this regard, because I wasn't particularly chuckling at a ton of it. I laughed at certain stuff, but the humor wasn't the ultimate selling point. The humor was just kind of part of the game. But the actual gameplay loop itself, I think, is fun. One gripe I did definitely have, though, but they do have a way around it, at least, is the fact that the spacesuit that you're in talks to you. And the spacesuit is also what determines or helps kind of tell you what your goals are, your next mission is. And some of the missions are like very like out of left field or intentionally comedic. Give you an example. One of the missions is rob 200 coffins that are floating in space. The game tells you open 200 coffins. By this point, I was already kind of on to the fact that the game has to fuck with you. But if that was earlier together, like, oh, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to seek out 200 coffins, because they're all over the place. They're not like just – it takes work to find a coffin. So it ticked down like 199 to go, 198 to go. And then eventually the game's like, eh, we just wanted to fuck with you. We're done. Three coffins is plenty. It's stuff like that. A mission where they make you build a thing for the sole purpose of saying – and the game says, we're doing this to waste your time, because technically – We wanted to give you something to do. So here you go. Now, the real mission is to go over there and do a thing. So it's like, okay, that's kind of all right. But all in all, the game still technically works. Like, it's fun. Like, I still enjoy it. It's just sometimes the humor does not quite take. And what I wanted to mention about the voice also is that he speaks very fast when he's giving you these missions. So it's like, hey, like, it's like that Micro Machines guy.
Oh, God.
So he speaks very quickly, which. Early on, you're like, oh, wacky spacesuit talks very fast, like those old infomercials. But then later on, you're like, I was supposed to have heard what the fuck I was supposed to do from all that. And I have no idea what that is. But fortunately, if you find yourself needing to know what he said specifically, there is like a record you can go through in the menu screen to let you see old things the spacesuit said to you. So you don't truly lose it. But it would have been better if you could hear it and understand it during gameplay, like while you're floating out in space and your oxygen depleting, because fun fact, while you are in the inventory screen, your oxygen doesn't stop going down. So,
oh, that sucks.
And man, you get 4 quick item slots, and if you don't have the thing you need, i.e. oxygen, in one of those slots, and you start to suffocate, you're going through your menu trying to find the oxygen, and you're still suffocating while you're looking for it. That has happened to me a few times. It's brutal.
It's like games not having pause features in online games, right, Cole, and Outriders?
Though, in this game, so. And this game is a little different, though, because the pause menu does work. Like, you can pause the game.
Okay, that's good, at least.
You can't You just can't pause it in your inventory because they're basically telling you, you are in space. You don't get to just leisurely browse your inventory while you're in space. Kind of like what I liked about Zombie U, which was an old-ass game at this point. God, I'm old. Where while you're digging through your backpack for items, zombies can still attack you. So you're like, whew, this has a little bit of tension in the game. I can't see what's going on out there because I'm digging through my inventory. So I better hurry the fuck up because a zombie can be coming right at me right now. Same with this game. I better hurry the fuck up because I'm going to, I don't know, die out here. So I actually, it's an annoyance that I ultimately enjoy. It's as odd as it sounds. It adds to the experience. Also, like that, alcohol warms you up, but it also makes you drunk. So now everything's blurry as shit in space, and you're like, I wish I didn't drink that, but I really needed to get warm before I die from freezing.
Well, as it stands, $24.99 on Breath Edge. What do you think of this one?
I honestly think it's a buy. It's a good time. But the thing that needs to be mentioned is that, remember, this is a survival game that has humor injected in it. So if you don't get down with that, this will bore you. But if you can appreciate a good survival game, like I said earlier, I was originally falling asleep. And then once that hook hit, I was in. It had me. So it's a good
one. Well, survival, so it's not for me, but others might enjoy it.
There you go. See?
All right, next game to talk about is called Bloons TD6, developed and published by Ninja Kiwi, released April 7th on the Windows 10 store for $9.99. The Bloons are back and better than ever. Get ready for a massive 3D tower defense game designed to give you hours and hours of the best strategy gaming available. Craft your perfect defense from a combination of awesome monkey towers, upgrades, heroes, and activated abilities, then pop every last Bloon that comes your way. Chris, tell us about your time with Bloons TD6.
Okay, Bloons TD6, which is funny because, like, it took me a long time to figure out that TD meant tower defense.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, TD, what is that? Like, I was thinking, like, DX or something like that, you know, or, you know, those kind of...
Football, it's touchdown.
Oh, touchdown, Bloons, okay.
Yeah, Bloons touchdown that, six.
That explains why it was a football game. Okay, Bloons TD6 is a is the newest chapter in a apparently long line of these kind of tower defense games. This actually is the sixth one, and I was actually just they have this like Wikipedia, like an actual fandom.com Wikipedia that I was reading, and I was like, this is like really a big deal to some people, this game series. The long and short of it is that it is a tower defense game where you place monkeys on a field in order to pop balloons. And that's it. So, yeah, that's the short version. The long version.
The version we need.
Yeah, the version we need for review purposes is that, holy crap, there's a ton of stuff in this game.
And there's a ton of monkeys, too.
There's like 22 different kinds of monkeys that you can put in this game. And the way that it goes is that, you know, it actually does a really, really excellent job of easing you into it with a tutorial. And, you know, it kind of brings out the monkeys one at a time, kind of explains what's going on. And as you progress, you gain levels. You gain two kinds of levels, actually. So this is... it gets a little complicated, I guess, but bear with me. So you gain an overall level, or overall experience points and an overall player level. And every time you gain a new level, you can select a new thing to unlock. And, it starts off, like, it gives it to you in sets of like five. And, once you've picked all five, you can pick any one of the five. And then, you know, and it'll be like a new kind of defense item or something like that for the most part. And, you know, of course, like I said, 22 kinds of monkeys, and there's things like cannons and eight-way shooters, and there's like monkeys and helicopters. There's like airborne monkeys. There's boomerang monkeys. I mean, there are all kinds of things.
Submarine monkeys, ninja monkeys.
Submarine
sniper monkeys.
Ice monkeys. Wizard monkeys, if you can. And, yeah, so... You gain those levels, and then, of course, like I said, once you get all, like, five of them or whatever, then you start gaining more levels, and then you get presented with another set, and you just keep unlocking and unlocking and unlocking. Then As so, you know, you place, of course, because it's tower defense, you know, there's a set path where balloons are going to go, and you basically set the monkeys alongside the path, in, you know, strategically so that they can attack the balloons as they come by. And, you know, as they do that, you know, if you're, you know, if you place like one monkey at like the beginning of the stage and it does most of the work, it gets most of the experience. So it's one of those things where you kind of have to, like, if you want to improve a unit, you need to have it like towards the front, or you need to have like, you need to have it set where something, you know, is going to actually do something so that you can gain levels with it.
XP was shared. I wonder if that's something that was changed for the Windows 10 version. Because you're covering this on the Steam release. We inquired. Yeah. I'm covering on Windows 10. We got Windows 10 codes a little bit later than Steam keys, but you're covering it on Steam. I'm on Windows 10, and it really seemed like no matter who was killing the balloons, all of the at least if you had someone on the map, they would get experience. If you didn't have them on the map, they wouldn't gain anything.
That might be it then. Maybe it's like shared between like units or something like that. I don't know. I'd have to check again. But okay, well, let's. Either way, that's not a hugely important factor here. What happens is that, like, your unit gain levels, and when you click on the unit and level it up, you have three paths of skills. Basically, usually it's power, speed, and, like, reach. It usually boils down to, like, those some permutation of that. And as you level them up, you can level up two of those things. And once you do, the third one is grayed out. So, like, that kind of changes your unit to be, like, a dedicated power and distance, or a dedicated power and speed, or speed and distance, you know, something like that. And, you know, there's basically the only way, like, because balloons aren't going to hurt these monkeys, so they're just balloons. So, like, the only way, like, if you put something in a spot and you don't want it in that spot, you can sell it off for some money. And the money is how you actually purchase, like, the skills and stuff that you've unlocked with experience points, if that makes any sense. There's basically like all kinds of transactions going on constantly in the game. And again, I applaud them for being very intuitive. Like they explain it way better than I do. That's for sure. And then
basically pop balloons, earn experience, place more monkeys, pop more balloons.
Exactly. And, once you have cleared 40 waves on a map, then you get a reward that is monkey bucks or monkey money or whatever that is like player money. So it's like it doesn't affect the actual game. It, you know, in the main screen, you're able to unlock more things with the monkey bucks. So,
yeah, a completely separate, like these yeah. affect the whole game instead of just the round you're playing.
And, you know, hand to mouth, those can be purchased with real money if you don't feel like working for it. Because once you clear one level, then, you know, the reward becomes a bit smaller on subsequent playthroughs. So grinding out all the money that you need to unlock all these hero monkeys that are in there, and all the costumes and all the like all the plethora of stuff that they offer you. You know, eventually, if you get really into this game, I bet you're going to open your wallet at some point at it, because, yeah, there's so much here. You know, hero monkeys are a thing that, like, it's basically like your main character that you place, and they're pretty powerful versus the regular units. And of course, they can also level up again with an independent set of like some kind of experience thing. They just straight up gain levels. Like, you don't choose their path or whatever. I don't think. I don't know.
No, the hero monkeys, I'm pretty sure they just go automatically.
Yeah. And, but yeah, like it's, you know, that it's all about those like transactions and things like that. And then, a huge amount of levels. This is why I opened the Wikipedia, because obviously I didn't get through all these levels. There's 55 maps in this game. 55.
Jesus.
55 unique maps in this relatively cheap tower defense game. I'm like beside myself.
I had to get in there, didn't you?
Yeah. And like, I think there's like three difficulty levels. And like I said, each one has its own set of maps. And of course you can choose a difficulty level like within each of the maps that will boost your rewards if you decide to go hard mode, if you find that you're defeating these balloons way too easily. And of course, the balloons themselves, or balloons, I suppose, also present their own challenges. Like, you know, they come out and it's not just, you know, pop, you know, poke them once and they pop. There's some that are like that, but there's different colors, and different colors require different amounts of hits. And sometimes they come out in like a huge stack, and then some of them are like, you know, this tiny balloon, when you pop it, it becomes two yellow balloons. And when you pop those, they become, you know, four different shades of colors. And then you finally, you know, get rid of them. So there really is strategy to like doing this. You know, it's just funny that the enemies are all balloons. Some of them are armored balloons, which can only be popped with artillery, things like that. Some that are immune to like certain things like magic and frost, and then, you know,
like camo ones can only be taken out by snipers, or
yeah, or if you're
have special the vision.
Yes. So yeah, it is overall, this I believe is the monkeys in a barrel that everybody has been telling me about all these years.
Well, I think the best thing is that for how much is there, it's only a $10 game.
Yeah.
They do kind of get you with the microtransactions. I didn't really get to see them because when I checked them on the Windows 10 version, they weren't active.
That's common. I noticed that whenever I review a Windows 10 game that has microtransactions, it takes a long time for those to be available.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on, if they're going to show up, when they're going to show up, so I wasn't able to check that out.
Yeah, it's mostly like buying monkey coin, or the monkey money.
Bucks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's quite, you get quite a lot for your money, you know, like, and you can buy them up into like increments of like hundreds of thousands, you know, and again, it's like about the cost of the game to get like a whole big old stack of them that will probably keep you munching for a while, but I didn't purchase any, so I like to just unlock stuff through rampant gameplay. I was that one Pokemon game that was on 3DS, the Pokemon Soufflé. I played that to death and refused to ever spend any money on it. And then eventually they just were like, they made it too hard, and I was like, all right, well, I'm done then. Anyway,
this one's $10. What's your official verdict?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, if you like tower defense, like, this game is, like, it has production values, it has tons and tons of content, it's actually fun, you know, you can, it doesn't, like, require a huge time commitment to sit there and play, like, you know, 40 waves sounds like a lot, but honestly, it's not.
Yeah, they go pretty quick.
It flies by. Yeah, like, this is, like, an example of taking something fairly simple and just making the best thing possible out of it, so... Yeah, $10 is absolutely worth it. It's cool. A buy it for me.
All right, next up is called Gravity Heroes, developed by Electric Monkeys, published by P-Cube, released April 9th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Gravity Heroes is a fast-paced, chaotically beautiful 2D platform shooter. Take control of your character's gravitational pull with the gravity shifter mechanic and fight hordes of robotic enemies on the ground, walls, or ceiling. Fueled by 80s and 90s nostalgia with an electrifying soundtrack and stylistically popping pixel art style, Gravity Heroes offers action-packed fun playing either by yourself or joined by up to three others locally. Purnell, what did you think of your time with Gravity Heroes?
I didn't play with other people, so get that out of the way. Okay, the next part. So my review is solely based on solo play. So Gravity Heroes is an arcade-style game. 16 levels or so, where the idea, well, 16, that's not even 16 levels, it's more like 3, 6, 9, 12 stages, basically 4 bosses and then 8 stages, but the idea is that it's a campaign where you're basically dealing with like a robot uprising. I didn't really care much about the story, but the gameplay was very interesting in how frantic it is. As you're playing a level, what ends up happening is it's an enclosed space, and enemy waves spawn out. So it might be like 10 seconds go by, and then a bunch of enemies come in. They can come in from any of the four sides of the room, generally. Now, you always start out in like a normal orientation, standing on the ground, as you would know it. But this game is called Gravity Heroes, which means obviously gravity plays a role in how things progress. And in this game, the way it is that the right thumbstick controls the gravitational pull you're playing on. If you press down, your character will fall to the bottom of the screen, and that becomes the ground. If you press up, you're now walking on the ceiling. Left, left wall, right, right wall. Enemies can play with gravity, too. So you might be fighting an enemy who only fires off to the left and right, and he's walking, and if he sees you, he'll fire at you. But then he might just shift gravity. Now he's walking on the ceiling and shooting at you from the ceiling instead. You might find a guy who has a wheel, like a sort of like freaking gizmo duck sort of wheel rolling around, but he shoots upwards where he's at. So if he's on the left wall, he's shooting across the room. If he's on the ceiling, he's shooting down to the floor, and so on and so forth. You have a gun button and a jump button. You have your gun fire button. You have a bumper button, which can be used to use items that get spawned on the stages sometimes. That can be healing items or grenades. You get new guns in this manner, too, though you don't get the control, which shows up. It's just if a gun shows up, pick that bad boy up and blast, because you need all the help you can get in this game. And then, for the most part, it boils down to just surviving the enemy waves. Also, you can wall jump, wall climb, too, so you can, like, kind of like how Mega Man X, where you jump against the wall and go up, up, up. It's mainly used for, like, controlling your descent in the proper direction, like if you want to, like, hang from the ceiling. Well, the gravitational ceiling, which is actually now a wall, and shoot at a guy. So if you're shooting across, you can do that. Because you can't fire your gun up or down. You can only fire it left and right in your character's, you know, perspective. Now, this game is hard. I'm going to put that out there. Not impossible hard, but it will challenge you. Especially if you're an old man type who is just
who has a hard time grasping the fucking gravity mechanic.
Like, I will say, at least in my case, I was getting S ranks up through, like, stage 2. But that's not to say that it was, like, me just going, oh, I'm so easy. It was more like, oh, man, I beat that level. Oh, I got an S rank. Cool. I'll take that. It's that kind of thing. But you will work for it, especially due to the fact that I may be the only person who has this problem when he's playing this game. But my brain kept wanting me to look at the right thumbstick as being the twin stick. So it was like, press right to fire your gun or up to fire your gun, but it controls gravity. So I'm holding both thumbsticks walking around, and I instinctively press the thumbstick as if I'm going to change the direction of my gun. And I just get curling in this, was like, shit, no, I don't have time for that. And then flying on an enemy who's flying through sky, because the enemy's flying this game too. And fuck, when you're in a level where enemy balls are floating everywhere and you're trying to control your gravitational pull through all that, it gets chaotic.
I just ping pong off them and fucking die.
Oh, you've been playing it too. Yeah. Did you get the King Beetle?
I didn't get that far at all because I am awful at this game. Like, my brain just can't grasp the gravity swapping. I'm getting, like, B ranks, C ranks.
Oh, man, in that case, the bosses would fuck you up then, because they inject a bit of bullet hell into the game too. Not particularly like cave style or anything, but you will be dodging a lot of bullets. So when that happens, imagine doing that while also having to manipulate gravity. Like, the first boss had a really interesting attack that took me a while to grasp, where he drops like a salvo of bullets all around the screen. And then when the bullets hit the wall, they explode into more bullets. And you have to dodge all of that shit. And for a while, I was like, how are you supposed to dodge this? There's bullets everywhere. And then it turns like, oh, he only shoots around the room. He doesn't shoot the floor he's on. So if you're on the same level he's on, it's easier to prepare yourself to dodge the bullets, at least. He's had a lot of work to do, but it was easier than dodging the first volley and the second volley. That's for damn sure. But it makes you work a little bit. But it's also fun. Like, I very much found myself enjoying this game and the concept of, like, I'm a sucker for games that involve gravity manipulation anyway. Secret. Gravity Man stage is my favorite Mega Man stage gimmick of all the classic Mega Man games. So,
heck clearly, yeah.
Yeah, you know what's up. Yeah, man, gravity.
Yeah, Mega Man 5 is my favorite one.
And for good reason. Such a good game. And it took me so long to realize that, but it deserves it. But, like, so I'm a sucker for gravity-based games. Gameplay that involves tweaking gravity. So I was a surefire, you know, target for this game. Despite my old man reflexes, I was still putting in that effort because I like the game. And it is fun. If anything, the only gripes I have is that I wish the campaign had more stages, because outside of the campaign, there's like, well, there's normal mode and you unlock hard mode for the campaign. So if you're that type, you technically have double the stages. But then in addition to that, there's a survival mode and a versus mode off to the side. So you can tweak with messing around with that stuff. But I like getting ranks on stages and high scores. So the idea of just like rambling through survival won't appeal to me all that much. But for what I did get in the game, I still enjoy those levels. But aside from that, the things I didn't like also was disappointment is that you get items that are spawned by like a little robot that kind of flies and every once in a while drops them off. I got used to what the healing items are, but I generally sucked at gauging what was a grenade and what type of grenade or whatever. So in the end, it was just like, I got this thing, I'm going to press the button and see what the fuck it does. I don't know.
Pretty much. But you could stop and stand on it for a second and it'll pop up with the name of what it is, but you usually don't have 2 seconds to sit and wait for it to pop up.
Pretty much. Like, that's how I am with guns, too. Like, I never had time to stop and see what I just pick it up and fire
it up and shoot.
Like, oh, I guess it's good. Yeah, exactly. Bang, 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 bang. Ain't time for this. But aside from those things, which you kind of just get used to on your own over time, I think the game is fun. Funny enough, I actually did look at one guy's comment. He's like, this game is too hard. And while I do get that it can be too hard if the mechanics of the gameplay don't click in for good reason, I think the game has the right amount of challenge for what it's trying to do. Like, it makes you work, but it's not impossible. And it certainly isn't impossible to play alone, because I only played it alone and I'm beating levels, no problem. It's I just have to play hard. Like, it's not a gimme, but it's doable, you know? So, like, I do question if I was just a smidge worse with the gravity mechanic, how would that have played out for me? But I'm thankful that I was able to manage it and get through some stages and have fun with it.
Well, then for $14.99, what is your verdict on Gravity Heroes?
I think it's a genuine buy. It's a fun time.
Cool.
I could also see it being fun if you have the friend circle, because the versus mode, I could see people flipping and shooting at each other.
I could see this being a good party game. I could see you losing friends.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if they, like, in the versus mode.
Oh, yeah, the versus mode is all about killing each other.
I could see losing friends, but...
Oh, yeah, because I'm going to brag.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Raven Sword Shadowlands, developed by Crescent Moon Games, published by Radleika Games, released April 9th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $6.99. After the fall of Ravengard, the world descended into chaos. The kingdom of Tyrius stood alone against a sea of dark elven invaders. The Raven Sword was lost, and the dark times began. As a descendant of the ancient line of kings, you alone have the power to wield the Raven Sword again and restore that which was lost. Chris, tell us about your time with Raven Sword Shadowland.
All right. Well, this is an RPG, and actually, I didn't even realize that there was that much to the main character. So this is kind of like this is one in a genre, an under-celebrated genre that I actually truly enjoy, and that is the Elder Scrolls-like first-person, third-person RPGs that clearly nailed it. You know, it's like the nailed it version of Skyrim. We had it back in Morrowind with Arx Fatalis. We had it back when Oblivion came out with the Two Worlds game, which is fantastic. I played it for dozens of hours.
Oh yeah.
And now we have $6.99 version that came out. Now, of course, Skyrim's been out for like 10 years this year, so it's unfair to say this directly, a response to that, but it really is. It's very, very Skyrim like. You basically play as this male hero. I don't think you can change anything about that. You can select his face, and you can move sliders around, but there's not as many sliders. You can change his hair to where it looks like different types of, slugs are attached to the top of his head.
Yeah, the hair and the facial hair do not match the body at all.
No. So, of course, the thing that you can do is make this guy as ugly as possible. Anyways, so you start your adventure, and yeah, you're basically told that, you're the only survivor of a cataclysm of some kind while a war was going on, and you got to kind of figure out what's going on, go find a magic sword, and go slay a magic guy. I don't know. It's mostly about exploring around and doing side quests. That really is what it is. Whereas like an Elder Scrolls game would be a little more complicated, there's a complex system of like skill trees and things like that. This game kind of just does away with it. You kill enough enemies and you gain levels. You put points into skills, and then the skills are better. And like, there's not really, you know, there's not a whole lot of variety in that, which is actually kind of nice. What I like about this game, honestly, is that it doesn't try for too much. It doesn't really shoot for the stars. Like, you've got, let's see, a quick look, 16 different things that you can do, like 3 thief skills, 3 magic skills, despite the fact that there are no spells in the game, and then 5 combat skills and 5 general skills. And, you know, each one corresponds to, like, different things that you can do. Of course, you can fight with melee weapons, which is like a sword, an axe, and a club. Or you could fight with ranged weapons, which is what I like, because you got a bow and arrow, like Skyrim, a crossbow, also like Skyrim, and a friggin' gun. you can purchase guns and just use them in the game if you want to. It's a you start with a blunderbuss, and I don't know where it goes from there, but I'm interested to find out. You get out to the world map, there's like, it's pretty open air. Of course, they rein you in a little bit, you know, here's the thing that I like. I like this a lot about this game, and this could have easily killed the thing for me. Areas load fast, and I mean fast. Like, sometimes I wouldn't even get the load screen. It would just go. And, the action is actually smooth too. Like, with the exception of the fact that, like, it slows down to load more assets and things like that, like, it generally runs really smooth. And that, to me, is like a winner. Because, yeah, like, when it comes to, like, you know, a cheaper game like this that's, like, somewhat ambitious and things, it's like, I look forward to the bugs. I look forward to the goofiness. I cannot abide, you know, a slow, you know, non-working experience, you know, looking at you, Decay of Logos. And this is not that. This is actually a fun, snappy time, and it deviates from the normal formula just enough that, like, I am actually really interested in this one. I've spent the most time on this, for sure, out of any games I've played since I got it. And in fact, I requested this one because I was, you know, this is, again, this hits like a hidden sweet spot for me when it comes to gaming, because they don't come out very often. That's the thing. Not a lot of people try to go for like the Western RPG formula without like a huge budget or something like that. And then you just kind of end up with something that's, you know, grand, but bland, as it were. But, anyway.
Yeah, so Raven Sword Shadowlands, $6.99. What is your official verdict on this one?
Okay, well, I was going to say, it does have some bugs. It does have some goofiness. It is absolutely worth $6.99. It's fun. It'll draw your attention just enough. There's, you know, some story, some voice acting, some things that deviate from the formula just enough to make it, like, still good. But, of course, nothing that's going to make it, like, a grand epic experience. But it's a fun one to play, and I really like it.
I will say I wish navigation was a bit better.
Yes, I was going to say that, too. The map is hopeless, and the compass just, like, it's just a dot, you know, a thing that says N, and then when you turn, it says NW, and then you turn again, it says W, like, and there's no markers on anything, so... But at least you can invert the y-axis. I mean, oh, yeah. I'm not asking. Like,
isn't it default inverted? Because I thought I went into the settings and inverted it, and it was normal. So I had to uninvert it, and it was inverted, which is how it should
happens. Be. I also like that the difficulty is just on, like, a slider, like a smooth slider.
Yeah.
Like, they really, I don't know. I love this game.
It's good. It's for the price that it is. There is so much to it, and it's impressively big. And I'm pretty sure it's like one person.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't think that I didn't look, but it has that feel to it. And like, sometimes, you know, you'll be shooting like some rats or like boars or, you know, goblins or whatever with your crossbow. And the character automatically puts up his weapon after some time. But if it's the crossbow, sometimes it just appears on the screen somewhere and it's like not in his hands. But it's if you draw it back out, it will appear in his hands again. Things like that. I love it. His shadow is just his two arms and the crossbow. They didn't even have to put in shadows, but they did. And messed it up.
I mean, it's called Shadowlands. There's got to be shadows.
Oh, yeah. There's got to be shadows. Yeah.
Yeah. Looks, Angerth is saying it came out in 2013 on PC, so that does explain quite a bit.
Oh, okay. There you go. So it is directly inspired by Skyrim. Well, you know what? They did a fantastic job. Also, you know, if you can, go get Two Worlds while it's $2 if you like this game. That game wins the award for, like, best goofy-ass experience.
I so want them to bring the Two Worlds games, like, into the current generation.
Yes.
Reopen the backward compatibility program on Xbox and get those fuckers in there. Get the Risen games in there.
Port them over to Switch, too. I mean, God, there's like all three of the Abe's World or Oddworld games are on there now. Like, I know Xbox games can be on there.
Have you played the Risen series?
Huh?
Have you played the Risen series?
I haven't played Risen, no.
There's one you should check out. I think you would like Risen.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called What the Dub, developed by Wide Right Interactive, Mark Zorn and Kurt Wojda, published by Wide Right Interactive, released April 8th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $7.99. What the Dub is a local multiplayer party game where each player overdubs missing dialogue from hilariously awful B-movies, woefully outdated PSAs, and bizarre industrial films with their own witty or just plain stupid dubs. Cole, tell us about your time with What the Dub.
So, this game kind of feels a bit like it's a Jackbox game that's all standing on its own. That's not a downside at all. We've seen a couple of them come out recently to take the Jackbox formula and put their own twists and turns on it. So, I'm not surprised to see one like What the Dub. The concept is simple. It's basically just what the summary said. It's there's a movie clip that will play and a section of the audio will be muted out, and you have to take the context clues from the clip and the remaining dialogue and try to make a sentence that will fit in there where the muted audio is. After everybody does that, then it does a replay of the clip, but it uses a text-to-speech voice to insert each person's dialogue into the missing spot. So it'll play it once with person A's dialogue. It'll replay the clip with person B's dialogue. One of the best elements that when I streamed this was sadly overlooked by a lot of the other people playing with me, but it was my favorite part of it. Is that not only can you just put in some speech for it to add to text to speech, you can add additional like sound clips as well. Yeah,
sound effects.
So the sound effects are fantastic and can completely change the scene if you do it right. Unfortunately, there were a few people who were just like, let's just add the fart every time. And you're like, no.
No.
Dude, you got to really. A well-timed gasp is classic.
I do want to say something. You mentioned that they play the clips back with the text over them. I wish there was something in between the clips to separate them. Because yeah. It literally just plays them back to back to back to back to back.
Back to back. And there is no, like, you can miss
There's
them.
No, like, static cut or anything like in Robot Chicken. Yeah. Switch scenes. Something like that would just be so helpful.
I get why it doesn't show like the name of who wrote it or anything, because after the clips play, you're all supposed to vote on them, you know, Jackbox style, as to which ones were your favorite. So obviously not knowing who wrote which one helps keep that be a little fair, so everybody doesn't gravitate to one that they think is their friend's crummy joke or whatever. But yeah, I could definitely see some kind of benefits, even if it was just like a little bit of static in between each one or something.
Yeah, like you're changing the channel on an old TV. Yeah. You just get that static burst.
There are over 300 clips, which is impressive. It means you're going to play a lot without seeing the same clips over and over, particularly because most games are only going to be about 5 rounds. You can increase it. But by the 5th round, most people are like, nah, we're done. We're good here. 5 is a good number. In fact, you can lower it down. And sometimes, depending on who you're playing with, you may want to do that too. But It means that there's plenty enough clips that you're not going to feel like you're rewriting jokes for the same clips over and over. However, that you can very much tell that more than one clip comes from the same movies or infomercials and stuff. And so you end up seeing a lot of repeat characters, which then leads you to like falling back on some of the same jokes.
If something works.
Yeah, not necessarily a bad thing. I do wish there was like some kind of like mega round where you had to do repeated clips from like the same movie or something and have to make some kind of cohesive story. That would be hilarious. Unfortunately,
I don't know if attention spans would work with something that
it wouldn't ambitious. Have to be like the whole length of the movie, but maybe like two or three sequential clips as opposed to just the one. You could really have some fun with that if you did it right. But you know, in its current state, there is only the one mode. It's just like you make the jokes and they're funny, and then you make the jokes for four more rounds and hope that they're funny. So it is one of those that like you're probably not gonna play it with your friends for 4 or 5 hours straight. You might get an hour or so in and be like, okay, cool. That was a nice time burner. And
but it's
on.
Something that you'll come back to because it'll really be exactly. fresh every time you play it.
Exactly. Just because you're not going to sit and play it for like an 8-hour marathon doesn't mean you're not going to get replay out of it. But I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was a good time. There are quite a few options available as well. You can adjust. Like I said, you can adjust the how many rounds there are, but you can also adjust how much time is available for people to type in their responses, which is nice if you've got people who are like on slower devices, or if you're, in my case, you're streaming and you have people who might be lagging behind. They still have plenty of time to get a response in before it goes tits up. there was even the option to... The narrator is an asshole, which is funny, but like if you're playing with a younger audience, you don't want him dissuading them at every fucking turn. So you can turn that off. You can turn on profanity filters, which are helpful. I did not do any of that because I wanted to make an obscene amount of just uncouth jokes, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, that's how you play this game.
That's how you play these kind of games.
T-rating my fucking dickhole. How about that? We're actually going to be talking to the devs next episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yay.
Yeah, so I'm sure you're excited about that one. I'm having a lot of fun joining other games playing this one. I don't have any friends, so I'm not really playing it myself. I should probably stream it or something.
You have an effectively occasionally watch Twitch channel. There's no reason for you not to be streaming it too.
I don't think people would show up for that. For me,
if they show up to watch me do it, why the fuck wouldn't they show up to play with you? I wasn't even using my mic and people were playing with
because
me.
You're entertaining. I don't know.
I wasn't even using my mic.
People just. I don't know.
Because
they go
I had
expecting your voice.
Homeschooling classes, and I didn't want to say random f bombs while taking classes.
They go expecting your voice, and then they get there, and they're like, "Fuck, she's not talking." But the game's fun, so I'm going to hang out and play. You lure them in with your voice, the siren song, Cole, the siren.
Lure them in that I might be there, and then I'm not. They'll be like, "At least the game's fun."
Oh my god. All right. We need a verdict on this one. What the dub? $8. What do you think?
Buy it. It's an easy buy it. I think for $8, yeah.
How are the achievements?
I don't know. I was playing on Steam.
I figured they'd have Steam achievements, don't they?
It does, but who the fuck pays attention to Steam achievements?
Yeah, true.
They were popping up while I was playing, and I was like, okay, that's the thing, I guess. But Steam achievements don't have that
magical pop
thing that Xbox achievements do, so I don't give a fuck.
Well, someone else who doesn't really give a fuck about Xbox achievements is covering the final game to talk about tonight, which is commonly known for its Xbox achievements, but Smart Moves, developed by Grin Robot, published by Zetalon, released April 14th on Windows 10 for $4.99. Smart Moves is a puzzle with a strong roguelike feel, different worlds with levels of increasing difficulty, sneaky monsters, unexpected obstacles, and great treasures await you. Smart Moves are the key to survival. Chris, tell us about your time with Smart Moves on Windows 10.
Yeah, I don't know what the achievements are. They seem to be pretty easy, but...
I can answer!
Oh, okay.
I can answer! So, Zetalon originally got in some trouble, a little bit of hot water, because they changed the achievement list on some of their games on Xbox post-release. And Smart Moves was one of those games. And so, like, a lot of people were going in and, like, getting the completion in, like, 5 minutes, when originally it was much harder. The Windows 10 version, surprisingly, because Zetalon is now known for being one of the easy completion devs, surprisingly, they released Smart Moves with the same achievement list on the Windows 10 version as the original Xbox list. So it is one of the more difficult ones to complete.
Yeah, you actually got to complete the game. I'm checking out the list now.
I looked at YouTube, because for these, they usually have achievement guides, and yeah, it's 1 hour to complete, according to the to
such
the person.
A, such a monster. I don't know how they think anybody's going to do it.
No. Well, I mean, like, yeah, it's a tough game, though.
Well, so tell us about it.
Yeah, why don't I do that? So... Smart Moves is a game where you play a dude with a sword. I don't know anything about this dude, and I don't remember if they even tell you. And he is trying to get all the treasure in these snake-filled fields. And so you start off on a grid, and the reason why they say it has a roguelike feel, I call it a Lufia feel, because when you make a move, all the enemies that are in range of you make a move as well. And the idea is that you have to make it to where you hit the enemy first, because if they hit you, then you have to start the stage over again. And sometimes that will lose you a lot of progress. But sometimes they also have checkpoints in the stages. Like, in a one-screen game, they have checkpoints. That's how much this will, like, end up messing with you. But yeah, so there's different enemy types, and they're all based on the level. They're always consistent, so you can, of course, plan out a path, and it's going to be a consistent one every time. Again, though, like, the enemies don't all just start rushing you. They have to, like, be within range of you. And yeah, it's like you move one square over, and, like, the snake will move one square over. Now, if there's one space between you, then you cannot approach that snake, because when you go into that one space, the snake will then hit you. What you have to do is open a treasure chest, because doing any kind of action advances everybody's turn. So the strategy here is that there's a certain amount of treasure chests in every stage, and when you open all of them, the stage is over. You don't have to defeat all the enemies, but they usually are right there, impeding your progress. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a game. When you open a treasure chest, that causes enemies to advance, so then they'll go into that spot, and then you can attack them. Also, if you attack another enemy, that will advance the turn, and then, you know. So if you can take down groups of enemies as long as they have the correct amount of space between them. And the game gets really clever with it. Eventually, they introduce spiders, or beetles, or whatever they are. They're little bug insects. And when you attack them once, they turn over, and you can just walk away from them. And but if you attack them twice, then they die. So that gives you a free turn, basically. So if you can lure a snake over there, and it's got that one gap between you, and which, you can't fix unless you can somehow advance the turn, then you can, like, you know, preliminarily knock over a beetle or something, and then guide the snake over to it, and then hit the beetle again, and then hit the snake, and then, you know, you win. So, like, the stages are just like that, and, you know, they you know, they introduce different kinds of backgrounds and different kinds of enemies. There's like gladiators and some other stuff. I haven't beaten the game, so I don't know what all is there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stages to it, and it's definitely more puzzle than roguelike. So if you're going into this expecting a hack and slash game like Zelda, it is not that at all.
No. It is straight up a puzzle game. And it's like when you beat a stage, you get a key, and when you get a certain amount of keys, you can unlock the next area. And there's a lot of areas on the overall world map. So yeah, there's a ton of actual stages in this game. And again, they're all one screen, but then again, they are also very cleverly filled with precariously placed baddies. So yeah, it's fun. It's got that 8-bit pixel style that I like. I like the music, and it definitely can become a hair puller if you don't really take the time to, like, you know, sit there and strategize. You got to kind of think a few steps ahead, especially on some of the stages that are just filled with enemies, which those do happen. But yeah, and like, you know, the only thing that I guess you kind of miss in it is that, like, opening these treasure chests and getting these coins, like, doesn't actually get you anything. It's just the way to advance the stage. So, like, if you go in expecting any kind of RPG adventure, it's just not there. It's just a puzzle game that looks like an RPG.
Well, $5, what do you say?
Yeah, $5. If you're a puzzle fan and, you know, you like this kind of, you know, checkers game, then absolutely, it's a buy it. Again, as we've both warned you, if you go in expecting like a real adventure, please look elsewhere.
Yeah.
There's plenty in the $5 range that that'll satisfy you there.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. I'm still alive.
We did it.
I'm feeling shittier now than at the start of the show, so it's definitely starting to hit me. I don't know how bad it's going to get, but...
Yeah,
I thought we'd make it better for you. Damn, thank you.
I reckon I recommend Tylenol and a heating pad.
You said I recommend. The first few times I thought you were going to say I reckon. I reckon you done better take some Tylenol.
I do a pretty good job of avoiding saying reckon.
It's wrecking him, but not nearly enough to not have that joke come up.
I recommend some cocaine.
Yes, cocaine. We were promised drugs at the... Who promised drugs? Me. I did. We need drugs. Yeah, who wants drugs?